The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So this week we're talking about desire and letting go. And we learned yesterday that desire has a lot of different manifestations in human life. It's a big part of life. And just to review the vocabulary for this week, we're using the word desire as a general term that just means our mental movement toward something that we want to move toward. And it can definitely be unwholesome, lust for power, lust for sex, addictions. But it can also range into just the needs of the body, hunger, wanting to eat, and all the way up into aspirations and good intentions, and even the wish to awaken. So I'm calling all of that kind of this space of moving toward or desire. And, you know, we can feel in ourselves that different kinds of desire feel very different. And that's important. You know, we need to gain some understanding and also some strength of heart around handling desire. So it's an important area of Buddhist practice. And today we're going to look particularly at the Pali word for it is kama, which is the realm of the senses. And just to be clear, that is a different word than karma, which is also called kama in Pali. This one has a long A, kama. I'll try to be clear on that. So this word kama, it has two different sides. It has an objective side where it represents the sensual pleasure or attractiveness that's out in the world, or that we think is out in the world. And then it has a subjective side that's related to the sensual pleasure and also the attachment that we generate, the sensual desire and also the attachment that we generate in our mind around sense objects. So I'll mostly probably call it sense desire or sometimes sense pleasure, but it's kind of multifaceted like that. And I should probably keep repeating this all week, which is to say, is all desire bad? No, it's not. But some are clearly more wholesome than others. And then as a refinement of that, we also need to check if there is attachment coming along with a certain wish. This is a little bit of a refinement. So, you know, it's totally fine to want a cup of tea and head into the kitchen to get it. But if our partner has finished the last of the tea and we get there and there isn't any, do we get angry about that? So the desire was fine, but if there's attachment to it, then there will be suffering if it's not fulfilled. So we have to watch that, if particularly in the realm that we're talking about today. So kama, sense desire or sense pleasure. Sometimes this refers to the five physical senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, i.e. pleasure at any of those sense doors or desire for pleasant experiences there. I think we're all very familiar with that. And sometimes it also includes the sixth sense in Buddhism, the mental sense. So like wanting pleasant ideas or having a desire for pleasant thoughts. And we have that too. You know, we sometimes spend time honing our views or philosophies or creating appealing stories, etc. The Buddha just used the word kama differently on different occasions. So sometimes only the five senses, sometimes all six. But when we relate this to the different types of desire I talked about yesterday, it isn't just one of the five. It connects into several of them. So just as a review, the five that we talked about were tanha, which is grasping desire. And then the second one was our basic bodily needs, hunger and thirst, needing to pee. And then the wanting, the various wantings associated with living a human life. And then the elevated wishes for well-being and peace. And the fifth is the aspiration to awaken. So when kama this sense pleasure is very strong, it's part of that first kind of desire, when there's a lot of attachment to it, the grasping desire or tanha. And then when it's milder, it relates more to the next two, to the simple bodily needs of wanting to keep the body comfortable, and then the wanting associated with creating a human life. So wants around livelihood and family and community. And so in those latter two cases that are more in the milder form, we tend to regard sense pleasure as very important and useful and justified. And of course, we have to do those, you know, we have to create our life. But it's very interesting to see how the Buddha talks about kama in the teachings that we have from him. So I thought it would be honest to go over some of those. And so to put it frankly, kama does not come off well in the Buddhist teachings. As we read and study the teachings, we have to acknowledge that. So he gives a series of very stark and graphic images for sense pleasure in a number of different teachings. And I won't even go over all of them, but because there's a lot. But just as an example, one of them is that it's like a meatless bone that a dog who's very hungry comes to gnaw on. It gnaws and gnaws and gnaws, but it doesn't get any nourishment from the meatless bone. Another image is a bird that has found a scrap of meat, and it picks it up and flies off with it. And then it's attacked by other birds because they see that it has something good. And so they attack the bird that has the meat. And if it doesn't drop it, it's going to get hurt. Another image is going against the wind with a grass torch. So if you go with the wind, then it will blow away from you. But if you go against the wind, the smoke and the fire from the grass torch will blow right onto you. Maybe I'll just give one more, which is that it's like sense pleasures are like a dream world where we imagine lovely parks and lovely groves and beautiful streams, and then they go away like poof when we wake up. So there, I could go on, but I think that's enough to get the idea. We say, wow, that's pretty stark. I mean, each one has a different focus, right? Each one highlights a different aspect of sense pleasure that is painful or troublesome. So, you know, a meatless bone shows unsatisfactoriness, in the end, ultimate unsatisfactoriness. The bird with the meat shows other people's envy. You know, when we have a lot of nice things, that can be a problem in human life. A dream world is like there's something kind of deluded about thinking that these things are so wonderful. And maybe we've had that experience of thinking that something we were going to get was going to be really, really wonderful and great. And we get it and maybe we like it for a little while, but then, you know, we realize it isn't quite as good as we thought. Something like that. So I think you get the idea. So we can ask, wait a minute, whoa, why does the Buddha do this? You know, why is this the most common way that he talks about kama? Is it really so horrible to enjoy a good meal, a sunset, my comfortable bed? And of course, the answer is no. I'll have to keep saying this. It's not horrible. We don't want to replace pleasures that we like with aversion or with guilt. That doesn't help. Then we're left, though, with the question, you know, what is the Buddha doing? I think the Buddha makes a big deal out of the underlying unsatisfactoriness of sensual enjoyment because it's so hard for us to see it. You know, we often have not just the simple enjoyment of these pleasures, but we have attachment on top of that. And we don't really want to see the other side of these. It's fine to enjoy things when they're present, but if there's the attachment, then we start getting into these problems. So he's getting our attention. The Buddha wants to wake us up for a moment so that wisdom can come in. The Buddha actually knew that it's hard for us to see the disadvantages of sense pleasure because even he had a hard time. This is also in the suttas. You might remember, if you know the story of the Buddha, that he had a wealthy upbringing. He had plenty of sense pleasures. And in one sutta, he actually says that he was intoxicated. He uses that word. He was intoxicated with youth and life and health. And hence, he just got lost in all the pleasures. This was before his awakening. And then at some point, still before his awakening, he realized that it would be good if he weren't so infatuated with sensuality, but he still couldn't give it up. I'm reading a quote now of the Buddha speaking. "Even I myself, before my awakening, when I was still an unawakened bodhisattva, thought, renunciation is good, seclusion is good, but my heart did not leap up at renunciation. It didn't grow confident, steadfast, or released, seeing it as peace. And the thought occurred to me, why is it that my heart does not leap up at renunciation, doesn't grow confident, or steadfast, or released, or see it as peace? And then it occurred to me, I have not seen the drawbacks of sensual pleasures. I have not cultivated that insight." This is the Buddha before his awakening. So if he had to actively look for the difficulties behind sense pleasures. And if that was the Buddha, I would guess it's going to be the same for us. So he gives us these things, these images for our contemplation, so that we can become more wise, so that we can back away from the attachment and the idea in our mind that these things are the whole point. And that if we just get enough of these, that's what life is about. I think we know many people who come to meditation have realized that that isn't quite enough just to have all the things that society tells us we should have. It doesn't feel quite satisfying in the end. So we get pointed out to us, these are temporary, and they're also not really controllable. You know, we might have gotten lucky and gotten a bunch of them in our life, or enough of them at least. And that's good because that's supportive. But do you really have complete control? No, we don't. And then they can also cause problems with other people. Sensual desires lead to all kinds of conflicts. So they're bound up with all kinds of unskillful mind states. And it's hard. I acknowledge that it's hard for us to see this, hard for the mind to see this, because we feel like we'll be left with nothing. If we have no other source of happiness besides comfort and material pleasure, then it would feel terrible for those to be taken away. So it's understandable. So the Buddha is being careful, but also pointing to the truth. So I did slip a word into that quote that I read. You might have heard it. It was renunciation. That's not a good word in Western English understanding. So we're going to talk more about what that word really means in the Buddhist teachings. It's actually quite a positive word. We have to let go of some of our associations. So maybe just for now, we'll just substitute the word letting go as something better than the word renunciation for us until we've had a chance to explore it. But I want to end on a practical note today. So, you know, what does it mean for our life if we start to question the value of just pursuing sense pleasures? If that's all we did, what would happen if we started to question that? And I think I would guess that many of you have already done some reflection in this area, because it's common for people who are interested in meditation to also be interested in some degree of material simplicity, you know, some understanding that getting more and more stuff isn't the answer to happiness. Usually simplicity is somewhat valued in our lives. And so one realm for simplicity that we can have is material simplicity, the physical stuff in our life. And we can begin to realize that stuff takes effort to get and to maintain and to organize and to remember, all of that stuff. And so we start to realize, it would be easier if we had less. So I'll offer a little reflection. Is there something that you have that it would be easier if you didn't have it? Something that you have to manage or look out for or deal with in your life, something. And what would it be like to let that go? It's interesting. Letting go often brings kind of an ease to the mind. And when it's a clean letting go, you know, when we actually were ready to release it, there's peace in the heart. There's no sense of deprivation. We need so little, really. So tomorrow, we're going to talk about this willingness to let go of things that we're genuinely ready to let go of, or that genuinely aren't necessary in our life. We don't have to let go of things that are necessary for our support and for our nourishment. I'm going to go so far as to say that letting go is a heart quality, and that the ability to let go of sense pleasures that are not necessary or even that are causing harm is a heart quality and something that we can do out of wisdom and out of care. So that's the focus for tomorrow, and I hope to see you then. Be well.